Origin is over, the whips are cracking, and the race is on for the Telstra Premiership Finals in 2018. Hi, everybody. Warren Smith and Matt Russell on You Can Take Me Now. I have seen it all. And off the back of a big weekend, Matty, we were bouncing around the countryside. I was up in Brisbane yesterday at Suncorp Stadium. What a cracking day. I mean, the weather, while it's been really cool in both Brisbane and Sydney in both the mornings and the evenings, the weather in Brisbane yesterday was outstanding.
I was just south on the Gold Coast. Even better was. I saw people swimming and windsurfing. It was like a mid-season break as commentators to head to the Sunshine State. And how strange to watch daytime rugby league at Suncorp Stadium. It took some getting used to, let me tell you.
Yeah, the first time in 3 years the Broncos have played an afternoon game at Suncorp. That seems ridiculous, doesn't it?
And the crowd suggested they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
They liked it. They want a bit more of it. And, yeah, it was weird, but we started the round on Thursday night with exactly a third of the season to go, of the regular season, 64 games. We're down to 56 now, and it must be said, the top eight, we thought it was done and dusted, but there's a little bit of uncertainty over the eight now.
Well, it was always going to work out that way with the Broncos and the Warriors playing each other yesterday, so the loser of that one was suddenly going to be feeling a little bit of the heat from below, especially if the Raiders had won, which they did against the Cowboys pretty convincingly down there in the ice bowl on Saturday night on the frozen tundra of GIO Stadium in Canberra. I have never seen a field look as more firm. It was like, it was so hard. Just looking at the field, and I guarantee you, if you walked around that field after full time, you wouldn't have been able to see one mark from a stud or a boot, or not one piece of turf was displaced during that whole game. I was mesmerised by it because the ground, obviously, in the minus conditions, the below zero conditions, was so hard.
I had a chuckle because my boys looked at the screen and said, "Look, Dad, you can see the steam coming out of their mouth." I said, "It's because it's cold, boys." And I looked at the ground and I'm sure I could see the frost forming. It looked whiter than it would normally be.
It did, didn't it?
And I text Megan Barnard, who was sidelined for Fox League. I just said, "Minus what?" And she wrote back, "Feels like minus 20.
Yeah.
It was cold for Meg Sideline, who had the hand warmers, feet warmers, everything going. And she said, "My brain's not working, it's so cold." And JT looked pretty much the same as he shivered in one of the replay shots. It was brutally cold on a cold weekend across the eastern seaboard.
Well, I checked the old Steve Jobs weather on the iPhone, and it said minus 1.5. With that was about 20 minutes to go. I actually took a screenshot of it and tweeted it with about 20 to go. So it was minus 1.5, still with 20 minutes to play. So I don't know what it actually was by full time, maybe minus 2 or thereabouts. It was going to get to minus 5 overnight. And I know, Braith, and that, I was working with Justin Hodges at Suncorp yesterday. And Hodjo came back, he said, "My voice is no good. The cold weather's killed me."
He didn't leave the box.
No.
He didn't leave the commentary box.
Imagine if he was on the sideline in Canberra.
The boy from Cairns, Justin Hodges, does not handle the cold. He went from minus 1.5, maybe 1.2 at the minus 1.7 or higher at the end of the game to what was it in Brisbane yesterday? 25?
It wasn't 25. No.
Hodjo said it was 30.
Well, it probably felt like 32. I reckon it was probably 22. Okay. It was a crystal clear winter day, not a cloud in the sky. Just perfect conditions for going to the footy, having a good time with your mates or your family and watching what was a fascinating game.
You know who looked like he enjoyed the conditions and clearly sounded like he had a good time?
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Bennett.
Wayne Bennett. Let me tell you about Wayne Bennett. So yesterday before the game, as part of our pre-game show, I had to interview Stephen Kearney and Sean Johnson and Anthony Milford and the coach of the Brisbane Broncos, Wayne Bennett, who we know after 30-plus years now can be a prickly customer depending on what mood he's in. Sometimes he can be effusive with his discussions in those situations. Sometimes he can offer 2- and 3-word answers. Yesterday was closer to the 2- and 3-word answers. To set the story, he had that situation in the lead-up to the game where Katoni Staggs had been ruled by the NRL to, as it turns out, now I assumed he had been ruled ineligible to play the game because he's outside the top 30. And we see this a lot, especially in the second half of the season, where players will be told by the NRL, "Yes, we know you've got injuries, but he's outside the top 30. And given your salary cap situation, you can't use player X, whoever it might be in that situation. And the word coming out of the Broncos camp was that Tony Staggs wasn't going to be able to play in the game. So I approached the interview with this in mind, thinking Tony Staggs isn't really a story because it's like talking about the scratchings in the Melbourne Cup as they go to the barriers. It's all about who's in the race by the time you get to game time. So I'm not really thinking too much about Tony Staggs. I'm thinking about David Fifita, who's going to take his place in the team. And as a result, Jaden Sua would play in the centres, normally a back rower, but going to play in the centres for Tony Staggs. And the Broncos are really upset by this. And Wayne Bennett is still very agitated before the game because where we do the interviews is right next to the double big open double doors of the Broncos dressing room. It's only a short tunnel, as it turns out, at Suncorp Stadium between where the locker room is and the field itself. So when you're standing there to do an interview before the game, you're not far from the field. You can see everything that's happening inside the dressing room. And Wayne Bennett, after not being there initially, you know, we arranged the interview for about 12:30. We didn't do the interview until about 12:45 because Wayne was off, and I'm guessing he was still going through the permutations of trying to work out whether they could actually start the game with Tony Staggs. Because as it turns out, the NRL had said, yes, you can use Tony Staggs in the 17, but he can't start the game, which was mind-boggling to me because I've never seen that situation. Yeah. If you're ruled out by the NRL, you're ruled out. They ruled him out of the starting side but said you can come off the bench. I've never seen it before and wasn't aware of this until after I had interviewed Wayne Bennett. So Wayne's not happy. He's agitated quite visibly in the dressing room talking to other officials from the Broncos camp. And then I interview him and this is what happened.
Wayne, we're two-thirds the way through the season. What does the Broncos report card say as we enter this run to the finals?
Not too bad.
Halves are lightning rods for opinions. What have you seen from your halves so far that you like? In recent times, how's their game building?
Well, a lot better than the critics think they are, so that's the main thing. That's the key to it, is what, if I'm happy with them, I'm happy with them.
And David Fifita, just 18 years of age, only his third NRL game, gets a chance to start today. He's obviously made a big impression on you.
Yeah, we're in a bit of a situation today while he's starting, but we think he's got an outstanding future and he has made an impression.
Good luck today.
Thanks.
Cheers, mate.
And that's Wayne Bennett.
42 and seconds was.
42 seconds.
I reckon it's 20 of W. Smith.
Oh, comfortably. I reckon I was at least half of that little interview, my questions. So, having interviewed Wayne a lot over the years on TV and also at charity functions and MC gigs that I've done over in the past, you learn that with Wayne, don't jump in too quickly. So if he gives you a short answer, leave a bit of room, leave a bit of space there, because he will quite often give you not too bad and think about it and then come back with something else. So in the milliseconds after my first question, and he says, not too bad, I'm thinking, don't jump in because he'll come back with something else here. But then you reach a point, and this is, it feels like hours, but it's only, as I say, fractions of seconds in reality. But you're waiting, but you reach a point where you go, well, I have to move on because he's not going to say anything else. But at that point, do you say, do I try and extend the question to get him to expand on his thoughts on they're not too bad? Or do you just move on and perhaps subconsciously leave the impression, try and convey to the viewer that Wayne's in this mood and maybe that's the best way to tell the story? So what in the fractions of seconds while I'm thinking about this, I think I'll just move on. I'll go to the next question and see what happens then. And off the back of that next question, it wasn't the answer you were expecting. It was still only a fairly brief answer. It might have been, you know, 20 words as opposed to the 3 words that you got from the first answer. And then by this stage, when he's brief-ish with a second answer, I go, well, I'm just going to bat on now. You know, we've only got whatever time in the pre-game show anyway, so I can't spend 3 or 4 minutes trying to get out of Wayne what I want to get out of him. I'll just move on to David Fifita, and that'll do it. And that was pretty much the sum of it. And off the back of it, I'm sure people at home were going, that Wayne Bennett is always the same, isn't he?
Was when you coach more than 800 first grade games and achieve as much as Wayne Bennett has achieved, that sort of longevity in the game, you deserve an immense amount of respect. And like you, I've interviewed him at functions where he has been so giving, so informative, opened himself up, and I thought, remarkable, fantastic. But I have never, ever understood his attitude towards the media when it comes to not actually speaking to the media. He is speaking to the fans.
That's right.
He is trying, or his job is to get people to watch and buy into rugby league, and I don't think his attitude towards the media has ever done that. So I've never understood that element. I've never agreed with that element. I'm happy for people to know that I criticise him for that element while also praising him for so much that he's done for the game. I've never understood that sort of interview because I don't think it sets a sort of example to other coaches in the league and also players in the league. If one of the doyens, coaching-wise, can behave like that, why can't I? It's a bad example. We do not want that as we compete with other sports. And I could go on and on and on, sound like a broken record, but I've never understood that element of the game. And further to your interview, I'd like to say that people who do the coach interviews and player interviews generally don't just rock up and make the questions up on the run.
No.
Speaking for myself, I think about the questions a lot. How is it not going to be car crash television? But how is it going to be informative and entertaining for viewers watching at home? And what can I do to make sure that my role in it is minimal, the coach or player's role is major, and the person at home gets something out of it? So when you do often half an hour's prep to craft three questions the right way, and then you are greeted with a coach who doesn't rate you, back you, or buy into the role the interview plays, I find it really hard.
Yeah. And you would think after all this time, now I know Wayne was in a bit of a mood yesterday given this whole Katoni Staggs thing, and he was really upset that they were going to have to play Jaden Sua at right centre. And he was right, because Jaden Sua in the 8th minute of the game gets beaten badly by Solomon Okata. Mm. The Warriors score the first try of the game. They get on the front foot. They go on with the job from there. But whether that was going to happen or not, we'll never know. But, you know, scoring the first try, good advantage to the Warriors, quite obviously. The hook comes out for David Fifita to come from the field, because he was only starting in effect because Staggs couldn't start. Fifita gets hooked off the field. Jaden Sua goes back to his normal right edge back row position, and Katoni Staggs goes in as the centre and does the defensive job for the most part for the rest of the game that you would have expected from the right centre from the start of the game. But they couldn't use him. Wayne, though, as you mentioned, has a right for the fans, to the fans. He's obliged to them to give them his thoughts more than not too bad. Now, you would think after all these years, he would have learnt that that's part of his role. That comes with the territory. You get paid well. It's a high-profile position. And part of that deal is you have to be a bit more giving to the fans, because it's not to me, it's not to Fox Sports. Ultimately, as you say, you're talking to the fans. So that's his obligation. And Wayne, still at this stage, despite his mood yesterday and despite being upset, he still has to realise that he has to be more obliged to the fans and more giving to them in those situations. He chose not to yesterday. He was a bit more expansive off the back of asking about David Fifita and why, you know, he's in the starting side. He explained, you know, it's not of our doing pretty much. But, you know, it's what you get sometimes with Wayne, and you're prepared for that. And as I said, sometimes you just leave that extra beat, that little pause off the back of a short answer, waiting to see if he's going to expand on it. He wasn't yesterday. Mm. And I could have gone one of two ways. You could find yourself in playing a little game of catch-up, trying to get more out of him. But then I realise I've only got a minute in reality. I've got a minute tops.
Yeah.
Three questions usually, maybe four. But I can't spend, you know, it's not like an interview where you can go back and cut it up for the news or something later on and use the best bits.
Yeah.
What we get here is as one package, all going to go to the air in around about an hour's time as part of the pregame show. So sometimes you just got to cut your losses and make the best of what you've got. And that was one of those situations yesterday. Yeah. As it turns out, I only found out when the teams are announced that Katoni Staggs was actually going to be in the 17. I still can't believe that that situation can take place, that Katoni Staggs is allowed by the NRL to be part of the 17, but the NRL will dictate that you can't start the game. Well, from my perspective, in that situation, if you're allowed to play,
anywhere,
you're allowed to play.
Yeah.
don't dictate to a team. What purpose did that serve yesterday? Because Tony Staggs played 72 minutes of the game. So why couldn't he have played 80 minutes?
I want some clarification from the NRL. I'm with you. I thought he was out of the game because he was outside the 30, and because of salary cap constraints, they obviously had players within the 30 who the NRL thought could have played a role. So therefore, Tony Staggs wasn't going to appear. And when I watched the game and hear your explanation, I'm confused by it. And maybe Wayne in the interview could have said, when he said we've got a bit of a situation, maybe he could have expanded on that a little bit. I know Wayne has been burnt badly in the past. I know that he's probably frustrated with elements of the media over his long stay in the game. But to treat everyone in the media, to tar them all with the same brush, that's small-minded. You don't do that. Yeah. And Woz, we can come back to that game in a moment if you like. But on the same day you struggled with the interview or struggled to get a lot out of Wayne Bennett in an interview, after the Roosters-Titans game, I had the joy of interviewing three first-timers, three debutants who'd all scored in the one game. We think it's the first time in the history of the game since 1908 that three debutants in the one team have all scored first appearance. It was Sean O'Sullivan, it was Paul Momorowski, and it was Pauasa Faamusili. Now, they'd all played their first NRL game, all scored a try, and it was a joy to hear them expand in their answers, to smile, to buy into the environment, to look like they enjoyed the interview, to give something back to the fans. And it's a nice contrast that three first gamers can give so much, yet an 800-game coach can give so little. We saw both ends of the spectrum on Sunday.
And just to bring in Wayne Bennett back to that loop as far as that story is concerned, remember when Sione Mataitea made his debut for the Newcastle Knights?
Yes.
18-year-old kid, killed them. Ended up playing for Australia at the end of the season, but at the end of his debut, he had a bit of a, I'm sure he had a barnstorming game.
Yes.
And Wayne Bennett didn't want him interviewed after the game because he thought, you know, in Wayne's mind, it would affect the kid, or he couldn't handle that situation. Having just played in the NRL, couldn't handle a couple of questions after the game. And then Wayne went to the press conference and said, at some stage in the future, that kid will play for Australia and be the captain of the Newcastle Knights.
Yeah.
Goes in and gives him the biggest rap you could ever give off the back of his debut game, but didn't see fit that he would allow him to be interviewed after the game.
No,
so,
we've got to leave that
again,
behind.
That brings you back. It's an old school mindset. And we've
it
seen
is old
that
school. And
with
Brad
other
Fittler
coaches
is setting the new trend. He's showing the way forward.
Well, that's the contrast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Open it up. Everybody's available. And, you know, if you can go out there and be belted by 125-kilogram men playing State of Origin,
yeah,
you can handle a reporter, and it might be everyone from a rookie reporter to a 25-year veteran asking you a few questions.
Exactly.
Freddie showed that with Origin, and eventually that will become the norm. It will be much more open, much more transparent. But I guess while we've still got Wayne Bennett with his views in the past, Des Hasler, the Bulldogs at Manly, it was the Chamber of Secrets. Des was paranoid beyond belief, didn't want anybody interviewed. I've been to a Bulldogs training session at Belmore a few years back and talking when Mick Ennis was still there and Dean Halitau was playing there. They were both injured for a game. And I'm just talking to them very casually. I know them both, have done for a number of years. They're watching the training session take place while Des is out on the field. It might have been the captain's run. And Des looked over and gave them a withering glare and they both went, good talking to you, Woz, and went and stood behind the goalpost at the end of the field because they were worried about being seen by Des to be talking to me before the game, in a game they weren't going to be playing in.
Oh, you know what gives
that's
me the most
paranoia
joy?
Off the charts.
And paranoid clubs who shield their players and give the media no access and play ducks and drakes prior to kickoff, playing a side that is open and giving and realising it's big picture stuff and gives you, you know, you bump them at the airport and they say, he won't play today and this bloke will play on the left and no secrets here. I love it when that team goes out and beats the one that's used cloaks and daggers all week. Nothing gives me more satisfaction to say, well, how did that preparation go for you?
Yeah, exactly. To finish off on the Broncos and the Warriors, seeing as we're talking about them and having a look at what happened yesterday, the Warriors were tremendous. And they're a bit Jekyll and Hyde-ish at the moment, being spanked by the Panthers just the week before. They had a 9-day preparation for that game, so that certainly came in handy. They had a couple of sessions back at home in New Zealand before they flew over to Brisbane to prep for that game for their final training run. And they used that time quite obviously very well because they came out And it was the consummate game plan from them. They were very good with the ball. Well, good with the ball in the second half after... It was a bizarre game in the first half. There was one sequence of play where both teams failed to complete two sets of six in the one play.
Yeah.
The Broncos had it twice, the Warriors had it twice, and they both lost the ball twice in the one play. It was like watching, it was went from the goal line to the halfway, to the goal line to the halfway, and almost back again. So the handling, I guess, wasn't there from both teams in the first half, but the Warriors in the second half controlled the game. They had the 16-0 lead. Blake Green was outstanding. Sean Johnson, it was the game management you would like to see from Sean Johnson all the time. Now, you don't often get it, maybe more so in 2018 we've seen it from Sean, but not in the past. And they, all the talk before the game was about the Warriors and their habit of sliding badly, almost winless between Origin and the end of the season over the last few seasons. Barely they come up with a win. Yesterday's win, I think, was massive for them off the back of those big scores they'd given up against the Melbourne Storm, the Rabbitohs, the Panthers. The Roosters belted them as well, 30 points plus.
Yeah.
I mean, in their five previous losses to top eight teams, they had conceded 166 points. And here they are yesterday in enemy territory, taking on the team who, well, if anyone's to move into the eight, maybe the Raiders or the Tigers, perhaps, very unlikely the Newcastle Knights, given they're three games behind with seven to play. But the loser of that one was perhaps the team most in danger. And for most people's way of thinking, it was going to be the Warriors. The Broncos were expected to win. The Warriors come out and played a great game to shut it out, especially in the second half. And they're, I think, for my mind, they're only now one win away from securing a top eight berth. I think 12 will get you in, given the Raiders are on eight wins, the Tigers are on eight. I reckon now, the way it's panned out, 12 wins will get you into the eight, and the Warriors are one win away.
Okay, well, if the Warriors play Melbourne this weekend at home and get beaten by 30 points, 30-0, are you surprised? Are you surprised?
No, not given what's happened
and
in the last 2 months.
And that's the problem with the Warriors still. That is still the problem. They beat the Broncos at Suncorp magnificently, but you, and I agree with you, we are not surprised next week if they get beat 30 blot. And until we are surprised by that sort of turnaround, then there'll always be a question mark and a black mark against the Warriors' name.
So they play the Melbourne Storm, quite obviously a massive game given what happened on Anzac Day, where they got beaten 50 points to 10. And they were 6-1 at that stage. Their only loss had been to the Broncos in round six before that. They just came off a win against the Dragons. Sean Johnson didn't play that game on Anzac Day against the Melbourne Storm. They had another injury or two in the forward pack, but they were blitzed. And what happens in this game next weekend on Sunday afternoon over there in Auckland is massive for the Warriors. But then off the back of that, they play the Titans, the Dragons, then they've got the Knights, the Bulldogs, Panthers, and they finish with the Raiders. Given they only need, to my way of thinking, one, at a maximum they only need two wins, that will certainly get them into the top eight. They've got at least one, if not two, if not three, if not four wins in them between now and the finals. They'll play in the top eight this year.
Yeah, but then the question is, can they go through a final series and win it? Who knows? I want to talk about fullbacks before we lose this game, because I think you mentioned it in commentary. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, a star of the game, his try savers this season, remarkable. Will Hopewadi over the last few weeks, he's been doing all season, but especially over the last few weeks. Aren't we seeing some fantastic try saves from our number ones in 2018?
Yep.
There are probably others on that list. I enjoy watching Michael Gordon still, who's 35 in 3 months, and he's still bobbing up, stopping
tries. He's the same
tries.
Age as Billy Slater.
There you go. And Billy's doing it as well. It's magnificent. The fullbacks are magnificent.
Roger Tuivasa-Sheck a couple of weeks ago against the Cronulla Sharks before the last bye. There was a play on that, and that was a tight game the whole way through. Warriors got in front. Sharks came back, eventually won that game 18-15. But Roger Tuivasa-Sheck on his own line made a try-saving tackle. I can't think who it was on from the Sharks. And then on the next play, Chad Townsend kicks the ball across field to the opposite corner. And who got there to clean it up, having just made the try-saver in one corner? It was Slater-esque. There's no more higher praise than saying it was Billy Slater-like. Tuivasa-Sheck gets there, having made that tackle, to clean up the grubber kick and keep the ball in the field of play in the other corner. It was an unbelievable play. And, you know, we talk about what he does in attack, quite obviously, and all the great fullbacks, what they do with the ball, but what they do without the ball. I mean, Billy Slater is regarded perhaps as the best fullback to ever play the game. He's without question, the best defensive fullback to ever play the game. That can't even be discussed or argued. It's just been phenomenal to watch him without the ball. And then Roger Tuivasa-Sheck is cut from the same cloth when it comes to defending his own line, which brings me to a point yesterday. And there I am in commentary, and there's a try scored by the Broncos. So it's 16-0. The Broncos, what looks like, have scored a try. Short ball to Darius Boyd. He goes through a hole underneath the post. He scores. Well, to all intents and purposes, he's scored. And it's going to be 16-6 in a moment. And maybe the comeback is on. But they, Grant Atkins sends the call upstairs. I want to have a look at an obstruction. Joe Offa-Hengawi runs through and collects. It might have been Adam Blair or one of the Warriors defenders, and stops. No, he stopped. Sorry, he stopped Roger Tuivasa-Sheck getting across. And Kevi Walter says, that's got to be a try. He wasn't going to get there. And I'm like, well, it's Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. I saw him just a couple of weeks ago travel 50 metres and save a try. So I know what he can do. And while he may not have stopped the try, I reckon his chances of maybe making a play at Darius Boyd were certainly 10, 15, 20%. He was going to have maybe a play on him trailing across. And so here I am. I've been doing this a fair while, and I'm pretty, you know, comfortable with who I'm working with. But now I'm arguing the toss, and I was adamant that it should have been no try. Kevi Walters, the current Queensland State of Origin coach, he's adamant that this is an absolute harebrained call by the bunker, and they don't know footy. And I'm suddenly arguing with the current Queensland State of Origin coach, and I'm thinking, how did I get myself in this situation? Warren Smith arguing with a current Queensland Origin coach.
Six-time premiership winner?
Six-time premiership winner. But I stuck to my guns, and I'm certain that the right call was made, because in that situation, he was denied a chance, would have had a play. Yeah. I think it was a good call. But that's just one. I can't remember the last time where I thought, given all the people, given all the things they've done in rugby league, where I thought to myself, hey, you're talking to X here, who's done a lot of stuff in the game. Am I treading on sort of thin ice? And I thought, no, I'm not. Because
be assured, was there are people sitting in lounge rooms and pubs, two
having
mates,
the same argument.
Same argument.
Yeah, there's
and,
no doubt.
And the tangent to that is, what hope have the referees got?
Yeah,
if,
that's
if
right.
If you and Kevy are arguing the toss,
yeah.
If Bill Bloggs and Harry Sullivan sitting in the Fig Tree Hotel are having the same argument, what hope have the referees got at the end of the day?
Because I know Kevy's done everything that he's done quite obviously in the game, including just coach Queensland days before that to
Who did you play for?
And Origin, the Granville Diggers.
The Granville Diggers, mate. That's famous.
Who don't even exist anymore.
The Granville Diggers. Back yourself,
so
was.
So Smith from the Granville Diggers, Kevin Walters, great of the game.
Yeah.
And here we are arguing the toss about an obstruction call. But I don't know how much time Kevy, I know he's played a lot of football and watched a lot of football, but I've spent hours, literally hours, stop framing plays, you know, in the wee hours of the morning and night in the Fox Sports studios over the last 20-something years, and at home as well, watching these situations. I'm pretty comfortable giving my opinion when it counts as far as those obstruction calls and whatever else is concerned. I think I've got a pretty good handle on what constitutes an obstruction. And over the years, having had all those various heads of the referees departments, and having had myriad conversations with them, what they're thinking at various stages and what their interpretations are, I was pretty comfortable yesterday. But that was one of those moments where I dead set caught myself, and I thought, I'm arguing this with the Queensland Origin coach. How did I get myself into this situation?
That's a good point, and people at home wouldn't realise what goes through your mind while you're on air doing that. But we are lucky to work with such a great bunch of former players. But as a general rule, I think the commentators often know the rule book better than the players, who've often played above 300 games.
I'm going to say that's 85% of the time.
Yes.
I think we know the what's happening.
And even see it on the field now, you know, inside the 10. Quick tap and go, no, you can't do that. That's You've got right. to come back. Offside, quick tap. No, you can't do that. You've got to come back. But, you know, we are thinking with our blood full of oxygen, whereas those on the field are often run down.
What about a situation at Brookvale Oval on Saturday night where a ball touches a player, bounces off Trent Hodkinson's head, goes back to whoever caught the ball? Was it Joel Thompson?
Joel Thompson. And Roz, you raise a great point, because I was arguing this with Brenton Speed, as he flew from Canberra up to the Gold Coast. I joined him in Sydney. And I was saying that it has to be an intentional offside because Joel played at the ball.
Yeah.
Speedy said, well, he didn't know that it touched a Manly player.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. But he said, well, how can it be intentionally offside? He can't be intentionally offside if he doesn't know that it touched one of his own players.
Well, it's up to the referee to decide what the player's intention was or whether what he knew at the time.
Exactly.
It's just...
I can understand Speedy's argument. But at the end of the day, I'm thinking, no, it's black and white. He's played at the ball in offside position, which meant he intentionally played at the ball. I'm sorry he didn't know, but it's still a penalty.
Yeah.
And I think it was lost on lots of people watching at home too.
Sure, I've got no doubt.
I know that it might be tough on Joel, and I know that he probably picked the ball up thinking it might not have touched my player, but the bottom line was the rule book says intentionally touched the ball in offside position. So there you go. But back to fullbacks. You said that the obstruction call was crucial because of the heroics of Roger Tuivasa-Sheck this season. The round started at Penrith was. We were both there. Valentine Holmes, Blocker Roach asked the question, is there a better side in rugby league right now than Valentine Holmes racing away? And I said, well, it depends what club you ask, what fan you ask, because someone would like Robert Jennings racing away or Nick Kotrick racing away. But Valentine Holmes, fantastic on Thursday night, not to mention debutant Caleb Aikens, more than 300 run metres, the youngster at Penrith on debut. The two number ones set up the round on Thursday night.
Yeah, that was astounding because he got off to a bit of a shaky start, Caleb Aikens. Hails from the same school. He went to school. He played in the same team as James Fisher Harris at Whangarei Boys High School up there far north of Auckland. Not a rugby league stronghold as such, and he played union as a kid, but didn't enjoy that as much as playing rugby league. Finds himself playing with James Fisher Harris. They both find themselves, whatever years later, playing in the same team in the NRL, having also played with one of the other Penrith Panthers as well, whose name escapes me for the moment. But Corey Harawira Naira. Yeah. There you go, exactly. What a coincidence that is that these players all hail from the same little part of the world and they all play now in the same team. And
remarkable.
Here they are. Well, they got beaten by the Sharks, but you know, at some stage, now Caleb Aikens, when they get back to full strength, won't be in the team because I think Jerome Luai, despite the injuries they have at the moment, Dylan Edwards won't be back at fullback. Dallin Mateni's Lesniak will be back and is a fullback option and had been doing a pretty good job filling in a fullback. But I think Jerome Luai, you talk about players that people want to go and see at the moment in Valentine Holmes and others. Jerome Luai. Mm. I mean, he has just burst onto the scene and he's demanding that he is in the 17. He has to be.
He does. He does.
I'm sure he will be the fullback for the remainder of the season for the Panthers.
And I asked about Caleb Aikens. I was speaking to Matty Cameron at the Penrith Club before the game and I said, when everyone's back, could Caleb play another backline position if he needed to stay in the 17? He said he played a bit of centre. But you know, to play any NRL this year, I think Caleb is delighted with. And before we leave James Fisher-Harris, chatting with Regan Campbell-Gillard, he said, did you notice his new haircut, the cornrows? I said, no, I haven't. And he said, we're all calling him Alicia Keys. Can you make sure you call him Alicia Keys during the call? So I didn't get it away during the call, but I said to Regan, I won't be calling James anything but James, and probably Sir James if he wants to. He's a scary individual.
Yeah, but you mentioned that. I did mention it during the game that he was sporting the cornrows, and I couldn't remember him with the cornrows in any game in his NRL career
Alicia
to this
Keys.
Point. Alicia Keys. Well, I'm doing the Panthers against the Broncos on Friday night. Right, don't be surprised if Alicia Keys gets a mention at some stage during the coverage.
RCG. Let's attribute it to Regan Campbell-Gillard. And that way, if James takes offence to it, it'll be a fair fight because it's unfair if it's James on me.
Do you need to put any weight on? Are you off to a KFC Regan Campbell-Gillard?
I need to bulk up.
To get some popcorn chicken and some mashed potato into you?
No, I like Regan. I love his honesty and I love his sense of humour. But yeah, when he had a broken jaw, to keep weight on, it was... KFC mashed potato and what popcorn chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the health and well-being unit at Penrith would make of that. The science labs might not find a lot of nutrients
If he was 45 years of age or 50 years of age, they'd be saying, mate, you can't be eating any popcorn chicken. But I guess when you're in the peak of fitness...
How many boxes would be required to fill...
Regan Campbell-Gillard, 20 or 30. He'd get through 20, comfortably 20 boxes of popcorn chicken.
Yeah. So
In a sitting.
I enjoy the information that comes our way, and not all of it you get away. Some of you have to keep for podcasts like this. Alicia Keys, bring it on this weekend.
So we've spoken about the top eight race, what the Raiders have left, the Broncos and the Warriors, the Tigers are there in that mix. They were very good. They were back to the good Tigers yesterday after such a lean trot where they barely won for a couple of months. They played with Robbie Farah and Benji Marshall back in black, gold and white for the first time as well. Robbie Farah was terrific out of dummy half. We argued the toss, or discussed it at least, a couple of weeks ago when Robbie was signed from the Bunnies to the Tigers by Ivan Cleary to see out the end of his career perhaps, and certainly the end of this season for the Tigers. They're right there. Now, they're two wins outside the top eight. Can they make a charge, or is it just, you know, hope against hope?
Well, give me their run home. Tell me who they play.
So the Tigers in the run home this week, they've got the Rabbitohs.
We'll get to that game in a minute. Big game for multiple reasons. Keep
really
going.
Tough game. Then they have the Bulldogs. Then they've got the Knights. Then they've got the Raiders. The Raiders, they beat the Tigers for fun. We've established that over the last two or three seasons.
They do.
I'm not banking on that one for a win, and that will be pivotal.
Where is it?
That one is
away.
Down in Canberra.
Okay.
Because they got belted the other week at Campbelltown.
I've got them with two wins as we speak, so past Canberra.
They finish with the Dragons, the Seagulls, and they've got the Rabbitohs again. Twice in the last seven games they play the Rabbitohs. So
they might only have three more wins, Woz. Well, let's be kind to give them four.
Three more wins will get them 11 wins. You're going to need 12 at least, given the Broncos are on 10 wins at the moment.
Right.
Unless there's a complete Brisbane collapse. The Warriors are on 11 wins already.
Yeah.
So perhaps if three wins won't be enough, four may not be enough.
Yeah. They need to recapture the defensive form with which they started the season.
Their four and against is minus 49.
Yeah.
The Broncos are two wins clear of them and 23 points better off. They're minus 26 on four and against. So the Tigers, if you're going to say they finish, say, on level points with the Broncos, then they would have to have a better for and against. Mm. And at the moment, they've got some work to do there as well. So there's lots of things against them.
I've loved Robbie's form this year, both for South Sydney when he received his limited opportunities and yesterday, dynamic three try assist, Robbie Farah, winding back the clock along with Benji. It's just good to sit there and reminisce and watch them, despite being well into their 30s, deliver like they have. Is there room for Robbie next year at West Tigers in a role where he sort of passes the baton over to Jacob Little, sometimes starting, sometimes coming off the bench behind Jacob? What does 2019 offer for Robbie in the world of W. Smith?
Well, isn't that the transition that was supposed to be made in 2017 and again in 2018, that they would have moved on from Robbie Farah? And as we said a couple of weeks ago, as it turns out, the player to replace Robbie Farah at the West Tigers in the hooking role was Robbie Farah.
Yeah.
Because he's back there to finish out 2018. So they're back to square one. So I can't tell you who will be the hooker for the Tigers in 2019. If he finishes off the season in good form and thinks he can go around again and take a massive pay cut, because at the moment, now that he's back on the Tigers' books, he's earning, you know, between the Rabbitohs this year and the Tigers, and the Tigers carrying most of the freight in 2018, as they did last year in 2017, he's earning $900,000 plus at the moment. It might be seven figures. He will be taking a very large pay cut. Now, he will realise that and may be okay with that if he figures that he's enjoying his footy, he's back there, and maybe Jacob Little or whomever is the next option at the Tigers to be the full-time hooker going forward beyond the end of Robbie Farah's career, whenever that may be. Maybe he will enjoy that role, but who knows? I guess it will depend on what happens between now and the finals. If they can't sustain a run and, you know, they finish on, you know, only a couple more wins between now and the finals, you'd say, well, it's time to move on.
Mm.
It was okay to bring Robbie back, but they've got to move on and find the long-term number nine. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens in that position.
And what happens this weekend is that the most capped West Tiger, Robbie Farah, plays game 250 for the Tigers against the Rabbitohs. Funny how it works. Magnificent how it works. In a game where John Sutton becomes the first 300-game Rabbitoh. So, you know, two veterans who've achieved so much individual milestones, head-to-head, Robbie against the club that he played for early this season. It's going to be fantastic. I hope they get a huge crowd there. It's a Rabbitohs home game, if I'm not mistaken, which means all the Rabbitohs members will be there en masse. The Tigers surely will be there to support Robbie, their most capped West Tiger in game 250. It looms as one of the real highlight games this weekend.
Yeah, and the Tigers fans will get free admission. It's a Tigers home game.
Tigers home game, okay.
Yeah, Tigers home game as such. But the Rabbitohs fans, with those reciprocal rights at ANZ Stadium, given it's a home base for both clubs, given the Tigers play some games there, then also at Campbelltown and Leichhardt, but the Rabbitohs full-time at ANZ Stadium. So both memberships will be able to get to this game. So it should be a huge crowd. And given the situation of the Bunnies, that they are flying, quite obviously.
Nine straight.
And we said, going back to our midterm report at the halfway mark of the season, I think at that stage it was five straight. And we said they're a massive chance to win 11 games straight. Well, they've reeled off four in a row. They've got the Tigers. After the Tigers, they play the Eels.
Yeah.
That would be win number 11 should they win those two. Then they've got the Storm, the Roosters and the Broncos. But they finish with the Raiders and the Tigers again in rounds 24 and 25. So going to play in round 21 against the Melbourne Storm, they could be going on an 11-game winning streak.
Well, nine-game winning streak now, the most I've had since 1989 when they won the minor premiership but lost to Balmain, lost to Canberra, didn't even make the grand final. So I'll hope to roll straight past number 9 into 10-11 in the weeks to come. And I know Greg Alexander has said it in games past that South Sydney, the best set play team in the league. I saw it again as I called this game from a scrum. It was like a training move was, where Robert Jennings finished it. And I thought to myself, was Canterbury even out there for that? Were they statues momentarily? Because it was so slick. It worked so perfectly. Robert Jennings, a hat-trick to go to the top of the try-scoring ranks in the league. I think two tries he scored without being touched. There's a lot to like about the Rabbitohs. They're one of the clubs who, when you're calling them or sitting on the television on the lounge to watch them, you know you're going to be excited by the Rabbitohs.
And teams do their homework quite obviously during the week leading up to the game. The right edge of the Bulldogs all week would have been, would have had players running those roles, somebody as the decoy on that left-hand side of the field in the John Sutton role, and then Alex Johnston chiming in. They would have had all of that and they would have worked against it on the training paddock at Belmore, and yet still they go out there. It's okay to do it on the training paddock, but then you've got to go and do it in game time when it counts. And at some point, all you need is a nervous defender, Kerrod Holland jamming in from the right-hand side. The winger has to follow him in, Remus Smith, and there's a gap on the outside for, as you said, Robert Jennings to just pull through and score a hat-trick to go to the top of the try-scoring rank. So, you know, when they can do it as well as they can do it, it's hard to defend. And you just got to take a chance. You can't come out of the line because they'll get you every time. You've got to just hold your space in the line and just hope they don't go to the first man, whether it's John Sutton, usually on that left-hand side, you know, going to him and he just pours through the hole. But you've got to take your chances because you know they're going to get you out the back, and just stay in the line and don't race out and try and solve a problem on your own, because the Rabbitohs are just too good at the moment.
Yeah, we've spoken about the Burgess boys. You know, Sam has been doing it for years, but the way that George and Thomas this year, and a great shot afterwards with the three Burgess boys now producing more Burgi with their bubs in their arms and Sam's little
girl.
They
might be New South Wales Origin players down the
track.
Well,
apparently, but
having
surely
been
not.
Born in New South Wales?
Surely not. Where's Dewsbury Moore? Is that in Queensland? It's in New South Wales, Dewsbury Moore. But even, you know, Sam's little girl going kissing Reggie the Rabbit, it was great at ANZ Stadium on Saturday, if you were a Rabbitohs fan, and we get to see that game as a highlight, round 19 this weekend. But there are probably four standout games this weekend, was Sharks, Raiders, Broncos, Panthers. We've touched on Tigers, Rabbitohs, and then Warriors, Storm. Apart from that Tigers, Rabbitohs game, what one jumps out to you this weekend?
Broncos, Panthers is...
I thought you were going to go with Eels, Dogs.
Eels, Dogs will kick things off on Thursday night. Seeing as we're talking about round 19, Eels, Dogs, I mean, it's a stinker.
15th against 16th.
It's a stinker of a game this weekend to kick off the round. At some point, at this stage of the season, you're going to have the bottom teams playing each other. All the games are live on Fox League, so you're going to see them. And it happens to be a Thursday night. there'll be howls and cries this week. In the NFL, they do have a situation where they have like what's called a flex schedule, where the broadcaster can actually say a certain number of weeks in advance that they get so many wild cards as such to play, and they say, oh, this week we've got the Cleveland Browns versus the Miami Dolphins. It's an awful matchup. Nobody wants to watch it. We've got it as our primetime game. We're flicking that. That's going back to into the dog days of 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon or whatever it might be. We're not having them on our primetime Sunday night game. We're taking the Patriots versus the Giants or whomever. So whether we would ever reach that stage in the NRL where Fox League, Fox Sports and Channel 9 at some point get the option. Now, you couldn't do it the week of the game.
I was going to say, can I put my hand up? I'll ring Wayne and say, guess what, Wayne? You're not playing Friday night. You're playing Sunday 2 p.m. now.
You're playing Saturday 3
Clunk.
O'clock.
Clunk.
Now, that's never going to happen given the Broncos have Brisbane all to themselves. They're never playing at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, trust me. But certainly at home anyway.
Well, I want to talk
about
this.
But in this situation, this game has looked like a bit of a stinker for a long time out.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago, you said, well, the Bulldogs Eels Thursday night in round 19.
A couple of years ago.
That's not much fair.
Yeah.
What can we do with that? And maybe in the next TV rights deal, maybe the broadcasters would look at that and say, we get two flex wild cards to play in the last 8 weeks of the season, beyond Origin, so not before Origin, not during Origin, but only in the run to the finals. We get, if it's in conjunction, if Fox Sports and Channel 9 both agree, they can say to the NRL, Eels Dogs on the Thursday night, no, it's 6 weeks out maybe is the cutoff. We're changing that and they're playing 2 o'clock on Sunday or whatever the time slot.
Can you imagine, firstly, Fox and Channel 9 getting on well enough to do that?
You know what?
It's
a commercial business, and if it works for both of us, if they see the advantages of, instead of the Eels Bulldogs playing at 7:50 on Thursday night in front of family and friends, family and friends only at ANZ on Thursday night this week, no, we're slotting in the Tigers and the Rabbitohs on that Thursday night.
Well, let's say the television stations agree. What
about the clubs? That would affect the round before because the Tigers couldn't play Sunday and then play Thursday, but you would have to work it out. So maybe you say, no, we're putting the Sharks and the Raiders in on the Thursday night.
Yep.
Whatever game you choose, but
so you affect four clubs.
I could see that happening down the track and in the next rights.
What about the fans who've booked accommodation and travel to be there on the Thursday night, and they get told, guess what? We've changed it. Your airfares, your hotel accommodation, null and void. But
maybe that's how they can get away with it in the NFL because they play the vast majority. Now, they do play a Thursday night game these days. Yeah. They play a Monday night game. But there's a lot of games in the NFL. There's 32 teams, so there's like 16 games or whatever it is at the moment. The vast majority, 90% of those games are on the one day. So maybe it doesn't affect the fans in the US as much as it would out here, given we play games over all 4 days.
Yes.
And there's one game, two games, three games on each of those days. So, you know, that would be an issue in this situation, the Eels and the Dogs. Well, I don't know how many people are coming from interstate to watch the Eels Dogs this Thursday night.
There's not going to be many people coming from anywhere to watch that game. But I don't mean to be disrespectful to Eels Dogs, but they're 15th and 16th on Thursday night in what will be cool conditions if the last weekend was any indication.
It's a tough sell.
But remember a couple of years ago, the last five rounds were floating rounds in terms of game allocations until we got a month out, and then the last five rounds would be sorted.
Right.
And the NRL said, no, we're taking control of the draw. And I was having this discussion with a
Which
Fox
I was
League
all
producer
for.
This morning.
I was right behind that. I think that was a good move. But
for the betterment of the game, so don't think about the television stations, but for the betterment of the game, to make sure that when you're coming into the finals, if you've got teams 1v2 who you didn't see coming as 1v2, just say South v Dragons, who might not have been forecast at the start of the season.
Sure.
Shouldn't that be played 7:30 Friday night or Saturday night or 4 o'clock Sunday in a prime time slot, as opposed to possibly being parked, like it could have been pre-season, as a 2 o'clock Sunday or a 3 o'clock Saturday where there's family sport on. For the betterment of the game, wouldn't it be best to have the last five rounds still floating until we get to, say, round 16?
Mm. Yep. I'm all for it. I think there needs to be just a little bit of flexibility.
You want the NFL flex pass.
I want the flex pass. And we can do it maybe, as I say, it's maybe only twice in the final 8 weeks. But if I had a wild card to change a game, then I'm guessing for the rugby league fans. And this happened in the AFL last week. Carlton played on the Friday night game. Mm. And every AFL viewer that I saw had a comment on Twitter was all blowing up saying, well, that's the end of Carlton for the next 10 years because they are awful once again in 2018 and they stunk it up in that game. Everybody hated it and they don't want to see Carlton scheduled again as a standalone game, ruining their Friday night AFL viewing. So I'm saying here right now, I'm playing the wild card and moving the Eels Dogs to 2 o'clock on Sunday. And I'm shifting one or the other.
Warriors Storm,
or, you know, just shuffling them all. I don't know. But whatever, however the system works, I mean, you have to look at it pretty hard and fast because there's ramifications quite obviously. But just for the, you know, just for the moment, I'm saying the Dogs and the Eels. Okay. Yeah, it's not much chop this Thursday.
Okay. Well, there you go. We've given that Thursday night game a good mention.
While we're talking about scheduling, what about this scenario? And this has been brought up, and you brought it up a long time ago, and it actually caught on just recently, the fact that Jonathan Thurston's last game of his career is going to be against the Gold Coast Titans at Cbus Super Stadium in round 25. Mm. And then there was the thought that the Gold Coast Titans might say, let's take that game to Townsville, get a sellout crowd, and get the gate as such at a financial boost for the Gold Coast Titans. They certainly could use that. But if you didn't do that, if that couldn't happen, if you're JT, would you say to everybody and make it known right now or in the next couple of weeks, my final game will be in round 24 at home in Townsville where I've played the vast majority of my career against the Parramatta Eels, and I won't be playing against the Gold Coast Titans in round 25.
Absolutely, categorically, definitely, no way. Because that would be so much away from the person that JT is and the way he'd want to be remembered. Sort of spitting the dummy and saying, well, if I can't finish at home in round 25, bugger you, I'll finish at home in round 24.
I'm not saying that's his thinking.
He would never, ever say that. I like the idea. I don't mind the idea of the Titans taking their game to North Queensland. That way JT gets to finish in front of the faithful. He comes along once
in a
generation.
But hang on, that would be JT saying, no, I've got to finish at home.
He's not saying that.
No, I wasn't saying.
It's the game saying we're going to give you your farewell at 1300 Smiles Stadium. Almost said Dairy Farmers there. What a time warp.
But wow.
Look, a few of the other Fox League commentators have questioned as to whether that should be done. I'm not with them. I would like to see the Titans go. But as long as the Titans say, you know what, for the good of the game, for the good of this future immortal, surely, yes, we'll take it there. But we want the gate. You can give us 50% of the bar as well. If there's a Jeep in the car park that we like the look of, we'll take it too. Basically, line your pockets, Gold Coast. Do the right thing. Make sure it's worthwhile for you. Make everybody a winner.
I'll take you back 19 years. And our colleague and great mate, Greg Alexander, is playing the final season of his career in 1999 for the Penrith Panthers. His body is battered and busted and he's done physically, mentally, in every way. Their second last game of the season is at Penrith Stadium and the understanding was that would be his last game. Now, quite obviously, JT is an exalted figure in the NRL and the world of rugby league. Higher than, you know, what Brandy had achieved in his illustrious career, but JT is, and he's going to be an immortal.
Yes,
we know that. So he's going to be an immortal.
Yeah.
Brandy, as much as he did in the game, won't ever be an immortal. But a massive figure at that time still, and certainly in the Penrith area.
Definitely.
His final game was going to be their last home game in the second last round of the competition, the minor premiership. They weren't going to play in the finals. He's done, as I said, physically, mentally, and Roy Simmons is the coach. And it was agreed upon. They have injuries off the back of that second last game. And Royce goes to Brandy in the days before they're playing Cronulla at Cronulla in the last round of the minor premiership and says, mate, I need you to play because we've got no one. And he's like, Royce, are you kidding me? Mate, I checked out mentally last week. It's all over. And he said, no, mate, trust me, you've got to play. And so Brandy reluctantly put the tape around the socks, put the boots on, trots out at plays against the Sharks in the final game of his career, and they got belted.
Oh.
And my memory is still of Brandy walking around. He came off early in the game, I think, walking, making the long walk around behind the in-goal area, up the sideline. That's how his career finished. And I was like, oh, boy, that is tough.
Well, let's hope JT gets a better send-off than poor old Brandy did at Shark Park. I don't know for sure where it's going to be. I hope it's in North Queensland, and I hope that everyone can be a winner. Fans, JT, the Cowboys, the Titans, surely we can create that situation.
Let's run through those games, the Eels and the Bulldogs, now that we've moved that game for the moment. In reality, it will still be played on Thursday night.
Monday morning, 10 a.m.
We've been scheduled for. That would be beautiful. You know, I'm happy if that game. You know what you do? Oh, you can't say there's no Thursday night game because I think the 6:30 slot on a Sunday night should be a regular slot.
I was thinking of you last night. There,
I love 6:30 on a Sunday night. I think it's a great time slot, and I think, you know, between the broadcasters and the NRL, it's almost like the old school Monday night footy.
Would it be Thursday night or the Friday 6 o'clock game that went was?
Probably the Friday 6 o'clock, I'm guessing. One game on Thursday, one game on Friday.
Yep.
Or, you know, maybe Thursday nights. People have their, you know, issues about Thursday night as they did Monday nights. Maybe Thursday night goes and we play 6:30 on Sunday night, have three games on Sunday.
Yeah, I'd be looking at the 6 o'clock Friday, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Thursday night, from a TV point of view, works, I think, for the broadcaster. So it's probably here to stay. Eels, Dogs, who wins? Bulldogs. Bulldogs will win for mine.
I knew you were going to ask that, and I was thinking this morning, I don't know who's going to win that.
I think the Bulldogs will win.
I better watch to find out.
I mean, the Eels went close quite obviously against the Newcastle Knights with Mitchell Pearce coming back, leading them to victory, but I think the Bulldogs will win that game, for what it's worth. Friday night, Sharks and Raiders. A huge game,
Sharks win this, for the Canberra Raiders. Sharks win this. No Jared Croker because of that dislocated kneecap, which is terrible for Jared. He plays regularly, 20 games plus. He's indestructible, Jared Croker, normally. So a rare injury for Jared. They lose their captain. The Raiders doing really well in recent weeks. But Cronulla, they were doing really well at Penrith last time I looked.
Yeah, I don't know what the temperature's going to be down there in Canberra on Friday night. 6 o'clock, at that stage, it won't be too cold. So, and whether it matters or not, I think the Sharks, like you, will get the job done, and that will make it very tough, if not impossible, maybe, for the Raiders to make the top eight by our reckoning. Broncos and Panthers, I'm up there at Suncorp Stadium.
What a game.
On Friday night. Massive game for the Panthers in particular, but the Broncos now.
Yeah.
If anyone is going to wobble and fall out of the top eight, they are looking most likely. And the loser of this one suddenly will be feeling pretty sick about themselves, especially if it's Brisbane, given what happened yesterday.
I told a Penrith director, who I reckon we might be able to work out who it is, I said, I like your team. I reckon they can make the grand final and win the comp. And
did his career finish in 1999?
It did. And I'll go the Panthers. You know, they'll get Maloney back, they'll get Cleary back, you'd imagine. Peachy as well. What does that mean for Luai? Well, you've said it, probably into the fullback role. I love their forward pack. The way that James Tarmo wound the clock back and gapped them early in Penrith.
Terrific.
Backed up by Viliami Kikau, who's been likened, I see, to Sonny Bill Williams, and I can't argue that. The one-handed carry. Like he's carrying a squash ball.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I love Penrith at the moment. And why can't they keep going?
I'm with you. Despite losing last week to the Sharks, they'll get all those players back. They'll be strong. They've got so much strike power. I think, like you, I think they can go up there and beat the Broncos. I can't wait for that game. It will be massive.
Yeah.
And should be a big crowd out up there on a Friday night. The Broncos fans need to respond and get out there to support their team off the back of a good crowd up there against the Warriors yesterday. It's the second of three games in a row for the Broncos. They've got the Sharks up there in round 20 on the Thursday night. That one isn't going to get flexed out of the schedule with a wild card. That is definitely staying in that slot, Broncos Sharks. Three games in 12 days, all at Suncorp Stadium. It's a big run for the Broncos and might determine the fate of their season.
Yeah, we've seen that.
The Knights and the Titans. Saturday, This is the 3 o'clock game up there at McDonald Jones Stadium. Have the Knights played 28 games already at McDonald Jones Stadium?
It seems like it, doesn't it?
Play there every week, it seems.
And Mitchell Pearce will be there again, and for that reason, I think Newcastle will win. How good was he on return? And the line he ran to score the try, Mitchell Pearce, I love watching him as a footy player. And you know that Cleary's locked in next year, barring injury, to be the New South Wales half back. Probably for the next best part of the next 10 years. But if there was an injury, I would have no dramas with Mitchell Pearce returning to that role.
You can only only wonder where the Knights would have been had Mitchell Pearce not suffered that pec muscle injury.
They'd be in the hunt still.
Missed basically half the season. The Tigers, I'm going to say the Knights, like you, will win that one. Tigers and Rabbitohs, we've spoken about this game with Robbie Farah's 250th. John Sutton becomes the first bunny to play 300 games. That is remarkable in itself, given all the greats who played for the Rabbitohs, especially in that golden era through the late 60s into the 70s before the club hit financial hardship. I'm going to say the Bunnies will win this, but not by any flash margin. I think the Tigers found a little bit yesterday and there'll be a little bit of belief there.
Yeah,
they went through a really tough spell through the middle of the season. The Rabbitohs will win, but maybe only by 6 or 8.
The last two New South Wales hookers head-to-head, Robbie Farah against Damien Cook, and you've got
Four teammates only a matter of weeks ago.
Exactly, and it'll be glory to South Sydney, I think, in that one, and on the back of that milestone for John Sutton, who's well ahead of the second most capped Rabbitoh in Nathan Merritt. Well done, John Sutton. Celebrate this weekend.
I'm also going to be up at Townsville. I'm doing the Sunshine State Swing. I've got Broncos Friday night, Cowboys Saturday night, Cowboys versus the Dragons. To talk about big games now, the Cowboys beaten comfortably by the Raiders down there in the Ice Bowl on Saturday night, returning back to more friendly confines on Saturday night. I'm going to tip the Dragons because you have to. You'd be going out on a long bow, I think, to tip the Cowboys despite being at home. But interesting game, given the Dragons now dropped a couple of games in a row.
And what's their record? Because I see today Paul McGregor saying it's not, we're not on a slump. It's not a, diabolical situation. But what have they won out of their last, I don't know, 4 or 5?
Well, the Dragons, so they won 3 games straight. They beat the Bulldogs, they beat the Seagulls, they beat the Eels.
Okay.
That form line, Bulldogs, Seagulls, Eels.
And narrowly a couple of times.
Not much to recommend it. They beat Manly comfortably, 32 points to 8. They got past Parramatta only just.
Yeah.
He got tested by the Bulldogs before that back in round 14. Then they've been beaten by the Storm and now the Tigers. They've got the Cowboys this week because off the back of the Cowboys, in round 20 they play the Roosters. Then in round 21 they play the Warriors. That one, a home game for the Dragons as opposed to going over there as they did earlier this season. So it's a big 3 weeks for them, isn't it? Because off the back of that they play again. They have a good run. They've got the Eels, they've got the Tigers, they've got the Bulldogs, they've got the Knights.
Okay.
So I can't see them dropping out of the top 4, although given how close it is, I guess you never know. They're down to 3rd now with a 12-5 record, and we have 4 teams, the Roosters, the Panthers, the Sharks and the Warriors, all just 1 win behind them. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility. They could drop out of the top 4, but I'm going to say they will do enough against the Cowboys, the Eels, the Tigers, the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
You've got to put them down for 4 wins there against those teams well outside the top 8. They've got the Knights to finish with. They should be a top 4 team.
Yes,
I think they will be.
They should be. We'll watch that game with interest. Dragons should win. Wonder what that will unfold. Warriors Storm Sunday.
What a game.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards the visitors. They're running second.
They struggled, though, at Brookvale on Saturday night.
They did, and but they've belted the Warriors on Anzac Day. Now, admittedly, that was in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want, I want to see the Warriors consistently win for a few weeks before I jump back on board. I know that were fantastic against Brisbane, but Storm do ooze consistency generally out of every pore. The Warriors not so. So I'll go with Melbourne to win that one.
Cameron Munster will be back. Billy Slater will be back. Munster, I think, in particular, makes a huge difference to what they do with the ball. Brodie Croft and Riley Jacks, they got the points against the Seagulls, but boy, they had to work hard for it. Now, they put down ball. It was a very un-Melbourne-like performance given the way they managed the ball against the Seagulls. They put themselves under huge pressure and found a way out of it, which is testimony to their professionalism and the influence of Cameron Smith. But Yeah, I'm tempted to tip the Warriors given what I saw yesterday because,
you know, I can understand that.
When you see a team in the flesh, it's different to watching them on TV. Yeah. They can be impressive, but when you're actually there and you see them in the flesh, it makes more of a lasting impression on you. They were very good yesterday. I'll take, like you, I'll take the Storm going back to Anzac Day, I guess, as my barometer, but it won't be anything like that. It won't be 50 points to 10. I think it'll be a very tight game. Storm maybe by a try or so.
And Brookvale on Sunday, Sea Eagles, Roosters. Now, the Roosters won on the Gold Coast without their origin stars, without Cooper Cronk on Bub Watch, without Mitch Orbison. There were all sorts of chops and changes made. Three debutants. I asked Paasa Faamasili afterwards. I said, now, you've scored a try. You've won on debut. You've got to tell Robbo to keep you next week. And he laughed and said, I've got $100 for him. That's my best hope. So I think the debutants realise they might be ushered out this weekend. But the Roosters, there's still something not there yet for them. And
Cooper Cronk, he wasn't there yesterday.
Apart from those players who are missing, there's just something that I want to see more from them. So I'll call this game on Sunday afternoon, knowing full well that the Eagles will be at home and fighting hard. Do the Roosters have enough to beat Manly? I want to see a really slick Roosters performance, especially in attack. We know they can defend. They're the best defensive team in the league.
Yep.
But can they turn on the points? Can they dazzle me in attack like the Rabbitohs are right now? That's what I want to see.
They'll need to be good in defence and hitting and sticking because the Seagulls almost got the job done with those offloads against Melbourne, especially in the first half before things turned and they didn't get the rub of the green on a couple of calls perhaps in the second half of that game. But the way they offloaded, if the Roosters can't lock up the ball, Manly can really do some damage and they're a chance to cause an upset there, and that would be an upset at Brookvale, 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Speaking of Cooper Cronk and Tara, our colleague here at Fox Sports, Fox League, is there any news from the maternity ward?
What
if Tara is still like in this waiting period, and sometimes when it's your first bub, as being parents we know, you know, it can go beyond the 9 months or whatever the date of birth potentially is.
Yeah.
It can go beyond that. It can go a week. It can go a couple of weeks. So what happens if we're here next Saturday and Tara still hasn't given birth?
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't want to say that there's an induction plan without knowing. Who knows what's going to happen? But I wish them all the very best because it's an exciting week for Cooper and Tara. I spent a long, long day in the delivery ward with
you know what? It's such an exciting time. It's a fabulous time, quite obviously, when you're about to have the birth of your first child. But I remember being, Cooper's playing, and I was commentating. I remember distinctly having.
Were you calling a game while?
No, it was midweek, but I had to miss an NRL on Fox program because of the birth. Well, no dramas, no qualms, quite obviously doing that. But I remember one night coming home from a game in the weeks leading up to Joshua being born and Janine's in tears on the back steps of our house saying, what happens if you're in Melbourne or you're in Townsville? How are you going to get back? And like,
good luck, darling.
You know, it's the labour will take whatever time. It could be a drawn-out process. As it turned out, it was.
Yes.
But you know, I'm sure I can get back, you know, and as the schedule had it at that time, you know, I wasn't travelling any more than like an hour. I was in Melbourne or I was in Brisbane at worst, so I'm pretty sure I could have got back pretty quickly. But as it turned out, it was all good. But, it's a great time to be a parent in waiting, but it's also when you're away from home and more we're seeing players saying, no, I'm sitting out. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck did it earlier this year.
He did.
So players are sitting out saying, no, I'm not taking the chance. And in Roger Tuivasa-Sheck's case, well, you know,
gone.
He's international.
Yeah,
he's going from New Zealand to Australia. So there's no way he's getting back in time. Cooper might be different. He wasn't taking the chance yesterday up there on the Gold Coast. So I wish them well this week. And hopefully there's a big announcement some size in the days
ahead. The good thing
is,
if it's a long, difficult delivery, let's hope not for Tara's sake, they can get to this part of the podcast, hit rewind, and listen to it all again. And if
wouldn't
it's still going
great?
On, you can hit rewind, go back to the start, pick it up and listen again.
That'd be terrific.
That'd help pass
that.
The time.
I can just see that in the maternity ward. Good luck to you, Tara. All the best, Cooper.
W. Smith, M. Russell, blaring through the delivery ward.
As parents now for some years, both of us, All the best.
Yeah.
It's a fun ride, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a great ride. It's been fun chatting footy again.
It has, mate. It has. Let's go towards round 19.
Yeah, big weekend of footy coming up at the end of this week. Until we see you next week, you can take me now. I have seen it all.